How do you know when it's the right time to sell your business? Hi, I'm Jared Kraus. I'm the host of the Buying Online Businesses podcast. And today I'm speaking with Ron Stefanski, who is an internet entrepreneur and marketing professor who has passion for helping people create and market their own online businesses. Now, Ron has made a bunch of money in this space. He has built many sites. And in this podcast episode, Ron and I talk about the portfolio of websites that he has actually built. We talk about why he hasn't bought any sites before, why he's gone the building route. Then we talk about AI content and the revolution of AI content and how it's not as gnarly as most people think it is. We also talk about how do you know when it's the right time to sell your website. We talk about the 11 websites he had in his portfolio, what he learned from having a portfolio of 11 websites, and what you should be doing to get your business set up for selling your business at the highest possible multiple. We talk about things like understanding financials, what you should do with your financials. We talk about ad backs and content expenses and the arguments on both sides of, you know, content expense, SEO, ad backs, and whatnot. We talk about listing fees with different places you can sell your sites, what might be right for you in terms of you selling your own business. And we talk a lot about Ron's experience in owning 11 website businesses and what he would do again if he was starting from scratch. We talk about what you can learn from him as well to stay in the game, the online business game, and earn great money and not get burnt out. Now, there's so much value in this podcast episode. Before we get stuck in, I did talk about a lot of selling sites. We do help people sell sites. You can check that out at buyingonlinebusiness.co/sell-your-business. There'll be a link in the show notes. And or if you're buying a business, make sure you don't go away and do it yourself. Get some help. Get my framework that I and all my clients use that takes the guesswork out of buying businesses. It's very well known. It's an industry standard. A lot of people use it. So you can get that at buyingonlinebusiness.com/free-resources. Now, let's dive into the pod. Do you have a website you might want to sell either now or in the future? We have a hungry list of cashed up and trained up buyers that want to buy your content website. If you have a site making over $300 per month and want to sell it, head to buyingonlinebusinesses.co/sell-your-business or email us at info@buyingonlinebusinesses.com because we will likely have a buyer. Details are in the description. Ron, welcome back to the podcast.
Jared, thanks for having me. Appreciate it. Happy to be here.
Oh, I'm excited for this chat. It's always good to talk to somebody that you've connected with many times and very familiar journeys and do similar things in the space. So it's going to be a good chat. And everybody that is listening, go back to episode 89 where Ron came on to talk about how to run, manage, and grow content websites. We talked about a bunch in that, which is very valuable. I even came on your YouTube channel. We talked about money mindset and stuff, which I'm sure we're going to dig into today. But yeah, welcome back.
Yeah. Thanks. Like I said, thanks for having me. Excited to be here and catch up.
Yeah. So I wanted to get you on to talk about selling sites because I know that you've sold a bunch in the last year, websites, but also wanted to dig into, eventually we'll get to mindset stuff as well for new beginners getting into the space, but have you bought sites before? I don't know. I think I've asked you this before.
Yeah, no, I'm really weird about buying sites just because you don't know where they came from. So I'm always one of those that I always wanted to build from scratch. Honestly, I think that's to my detriment. I think that it probably would be a good idea to buy sites at times, but I never took the leap just because, you know, I had a lot of sites that I grew and, you know, the ones that I was slowly growing were growing as the bigger ones as I was optimizing them. So I didn't really need to because I kind of built up a, you know, a whole portfolio, if you will.
Yeah, yeah. And so up until this point, I mean, let's just give a quick cap of like your growth strategy. What's been like the 80% of what you've been able to do to grow your content sites before selling them?
Yeah, so I mean, it goes back to what everyone says. I feel like pretty much I spent most of my time, you know, well, I didn't actually write the content, but, you know, I've had a lot of people just creating content. And I would focus on some backlink campaigns here and there. It kind of depends on what the niche is. I feel like some of them you need a lot of links. Some of them you don't need any links. So doing a lot of things around that. Now I still have two websites that I'm actively working on. And I'm getting knee deep into all the AI content, edited with people, but AI content production. And we're churning out a lot more content that way. It's a lot more cost effective, but it's just kind of a different beast. But yeah, I have two sites that are doing that now. So it's all about creating the content first. That's important, making sure that the content quality is there. And then, you know, I don't care what anyone says, you always got to get some links. You just have to, especially nowadays. So
yeah, absolutely. We've seen that more than ever now, coming into 2024 with authority and stuff like that. It's been so, so important. Now, quickly on the AI content, it's awesome, right? Like it's really cool to use. A lot of people get really, really worried about it, and you should be worried about it if you don't know how to prompt it right and get it edited in a format that is like really awesome for people. I think it's like a lot of people are worried about it of like, oh no, it's gonna, you know, we can do more scale and everybody's, you know, AI is just gonna write it itself. The reality is it's not as hands off as people believe to get like the quality that you want, right?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely agree with that. My strategy for the most part, we're producing 15 to 20 articles per week for each site that we have. And the prompting, I think you hit the nail on the head. That's the biggest thing. I mean, I create extremely in-depth outlines, and I prompt every set of that outline and everything I could possibly do within that outline, including, you know, telling the AI you have to include external links, this, that, and the other. There's a lot of things. I mean, I don't even know, 5 to 10 hours goes into each template, I'd say. And then basically I take that particular template and I say, okay, now that we've created a template that'll work, here's the, you know, 200, 300 pieces of content that will fit into this template. And then we're basically kind of off and running with AI with that. And then, like I said, I mean, you know, some people are just like, you know, they type something into, you know, ChatGPT or whatever, they copy paste, they put it in. That's not what this is. So we do the template, put a lot of work into that. After the output comes out, I have a virtual assistant that then takes it, puts it into an article. And then I have a human editor go through, make sure all the links are right, because half the time they aren't. Make sure all the statistics are accurate, because most of the time those aren't. Adding images, all that kind of stuff. So there is still some heavy lifting that goes into it. It's more cost effective, but at the same time, you know, it's not hands off. I don't think it ever will be. So, but yeah, we've been able to scale up content so much, I've been doing a lot more around like site architecture, like silos, and really focused on that as well. That's been a really, really big thing that I've been focusing on, and we'll see how it goes. But, you know, so far it's been pretty good. You know, one of the sites is doing really well. The other one's doing okay. So
I like that you mentioned two things. One being that it's never going to be hands off in terms of content creation. Think about somebody that produces, not just content, but produces like a product. You know, it could be a physical product, it could be a service or whatever it is. The best ones have the most human touch and thought process behind them, typically. And then you also said, you know, when you're adding more volume in of content, having the site structure the right way, so you're not just creating so much content that Google's like, I don't know where to find it or how to find it, and humans don't know either. So I think it's really cool that you've said you've been working on that site structure to ensure, you know, it can be found and it's worthy, it's content that's, you know, worthy being found and ranked. So I want to shift into, because we don't need to make this an AI content discussion, there's 7 billion ones of those around the internet with the FOMO link to it, which we're not going to do. So I'm really curious to hear about how and your thinking process and decision-making around selling a site. Because there are people listening that are, you know, they either own sites and like, when's the right time for me to sell? And there's people that are buying and they're thinking, do I sell it in 1 year, 2 years, 3 years? Or there's certain metrics I should be looking within my site to sell it? Or is it just a matter of personal preference? It could be the environment as well. What's happening in the landscape of the digital space with content sites or the type of business that they own. But for you, Ron, what sort of like, what has helped you come to the conclusion on like when to sell some of your sites?
Yeah. So for me, I had a situation where I essentially built a whole portfolio of sites. And while that is nice and glamorous at times, it's also becomes kind of a nightmare of focusing. You know, so I got into a situation when AI entered the chat, if you will, and like ChatGPT kind of got mainstream. It really scared me because I thought, hey, writing's on the wall. You know, websites are dead. I probably overreacted, to be honest. I think that there is some danger ahead, if you will, but I definitely overreacted at the time. And that said, so I still had a portfolio of sites. Last year, I had two sites that I sold off because, and the reason why, like the timing, was that I just wasn't working on them anymore. And I found that when you're not working on sites, they just tend to die. They, you know, regardless of what you want to do, they just tend to die. If you're not publishing new content or going through revisions or having a team do it, they tend to die. So I thought, you know what, I'll get rid of these two, you know, and a part of it is really focus for me. So like I mentioned, I still have two sites that I'm actively working on. And I kind of wanted to pare down my focus too, because I mean, at one point I think I had 10 or 11 sites and I had people working on all those sites and I sold most of those sites for good money. But at the end of the day, it was kind of, you know, it's time to let these go and not let them die, you know, when they become useless and not worth anything. So for me, that's when I did it. Everyone has their different reasons though, you know, but it just wasn't a focus anymore. And I knew someone else would take it and the two people that have bought them have, and you know, everyone's happy.
I think it's a really good reason is like when something doesn't become a focus anymore and you shift your focus to something else, which comes a little bit more priority. It's the same with anything in life. It's going to, you know, you're not putting your resources towards it, meaning that it's going to get neglected. And, you know, it depends on how long it's going to take for it to just, you know, die. It's, I've seen that with sites as well, like where I've just left them and neglected them and just haven't fared well because my own fault. I'll take full responsibility. And I'm not just talking about content sites. I'm talking about e-commerce businesses that I bought that I was like, they're working well, had people managing them. Obviously at times it needed a bit of work, but it got to the point where I was making far more money or I was way more priority, you know, had a higher priority somewhere else. It's like, it's pointless holding on to these. I think it's good to identify that as soon as possible. I don't know, for myself, like I went and bought heaps, like you had 11 sites in your portfolio, just, you know, is more than most people are going to want to manage. And undoubtedly, well, I was running four businesses at once as well. It's like a couple of e-com, and I just realized that it's just not the right thing to do resource-wise for me personally, even if I do have team managing them, right?
Yeah, no, I agree. So for me, the biggest problem became, so when you have 11 sites, something goes wrong with every site every day. So I was running around just literally putting out fires constantly. Or, you know, this thing or this site needed to restructure, or this site needed this, and it just became too much. So I've been paring that down. And like I said, last year was the two, and then I just have two left. And I feel like now I'm in a good place. Both these sites can go really wide. I can create thousands of articles on both of them. I've got a good team in place. Everything's moving forward. I mean, that's, you know, but at the time it made sense to sell them and I don't regret it at all. Now we have the, you know, the money in the bank and we're comfortable, which is the key to the whole thing. So
congrats. Yeah. You've sort of cashed in some of the fruits of your labor really. And you can do what you want with it now, which is a really cool thing. I think that's a really good stage for people that are listening. Like they're wanting to buy businesses and they want to get to a point that like, I mean, you don't work a job, regular job, you work for yourself, right? From home. And you choose your own hours and how many hours. That's where most people are wanting to get to. You know, get a couple of businesses, build them up, sell them off, maybe buy you know, one or two larger ones, and just cruise. You know, like that's most people's goal here. So when you decided to sell down some sites, what was your process? Did you go to brokers? When you said, oh, I'm going to sell something, like what did it look like from there? And like the reason I ask is like, how can somebody listening benefit from the process that you took and what you may have learned from listing sites and selling them?
Yeah. So first thing I'll say is I sold when they were both on a downward trend. I do not recommend that if you want top dollar. But again, this was like, you know, it became really passive income and something that I just honestly kind of didn't pay attention to. So if you're buying with the intent to sell, don't do that. you know, get 6 to 12 months of solid earnings that are consistent, and go from there. In my case, like I said, they were kind of getting neglected anyway. And I was like, well, I guess it's just time to sell them. I did want to see at least some steady, and they both had pretty much steady traffic numbers for a good 6 months. You know, when I was listing to sell, it wasn't like they were on a downward trend, but from previous numbers that were the highs, right? They were on a downward trend. So when I did it, you know, both of these sites were under 100,000. So I think that's important to note, because, you know, if you're going really high end, you know, you might want to list, it depends on where you want to list. There's a lot of places. In my case, where they were at, I listed on Flippa, and basically, you know, talked to them. I actually had some contacts because I sold the site there previously. So I basically talked to them and said, hey, I want to sell my sites. One of the reasons why I go with Flippa, you know, especially for a site that size, is that they have the lower commission. I should say at the time they had the lowest amount that they took from you, if you will. So they had the lowest, like, you know, if it convert or if it is successful, the, I don't remember what they call it, success fee or whatever it is. They had the lowest success fee. Yeah. Yeah. So they had a low success fee compared to others. I don't know how it is now. I can't speak to now. But you know, if that's still the same for me, that was a big thing. Cause it's like, well, all these different, you know, brokers are going to sell my site. Why am I going to pay, you know, when you're talking about tens of thousands of dollars, it's like, well, why am I going to pay this other one $5,000 more to do the same thing? You know? So that was my thought process there. That said, I mean, it was challenging listing. I actually listed three sites. One was a much higher number and multiple. That one actually I didn't get rid of. It never got the asset I was looking for, but the other two did. But it was kind of a lot at the time because, you know, listing three sites at one time is difficult. I got all the financials for the last 12 months, which kind of became, you know, for the first two, it was fine. It became a little problematic for the higher end site, the more expensive one, because if people want financing, usually it's 24 months. So they want 2 full years. So that was a little bit difficult with that one. I did end up getting that, but just getting those numbers was difficult because you got to go through all the different, you know, where you're pulling profit from and all the different affiliates and all that. So that was honestly a headache. That's the biggest part. I do all that myself because I know my books aren't perfect. I have one like QuickBooks account that collects all the data from all the sites. So, you know, if you're going to structure it and you want to start like and really be smart of it, you have one site, have one QuickBooks account for one site and one, you know, where you're logging all your expenses in one area for that one site. That would be the right way to do it. I didn't do that. I had a portfolio site. So, you know, it's hard to do it. But yeah, so I did that.
And, you know, like I've got multiple businesses and it all goes under one umbrella. And it's easy for us to say in theory, hey, make sure you do your P&L for each one so you know how each site is performing. But when you've got your finger on the pulse and you know how each site is performing based on where it's at because you know it so well, if it goes all under the one umbrella, you know it's doing well and you know what's not doing so well. And then it comes time to sell and you're like, ah, damn, I've got to go back a year or two and you know, create a P&L that's like actually digestible from a human being. And it's easy for us to say, like, guys, if you're going to sell a site, just have that in order or just keep doing it whilst you own it. But if you don't have that, like Ron and I, and probably you as well, let's be real, just carve out some time to get it nailed. And the better that is, the more digestible it is and the better you make it look, don't just make it look, you know, look good, but make sure it is good and it's real data. It's not just you manufacturing it. But if you have that in a presentable fashion, it's really a big tick from a buyer when they see that, right, Ron?
Absolutely. And I think one of the hard things, so if you're buying a business, it's easier to have that P&L from the start and to keep track of it, things as it's going. If you're buying a business with the intent of selling, if you think, well, I'm going to buy this and, you know, 2-3 years, I want to sell it for, you know, and double the amount of revenue, et cetera. That's a good thing, right? That's easier to do. In my case, it's difficult because I start a site. I don't know how big it's going to get. I don't know when I'm going to sell it. And the last thing I want to do every month is do a P&L of the $3,000 in content losses that I have every month for the first year. You know what I mean? So that's kind of the issue. So I just figure, hey, since I'm building these from scratch, I'll just deal with that headache when it's time. And last year I had to deal with 3 headaches at once. I was able to get rid of 2 of those headaches. So it all worked out. But yeah, that's the hard part about it, right? Is because when you build, you may not even think, oh, you may think I'm going to keep this thing forever. Well, forever isn't forever in the website world. So,
and when you do build it from scratch, you're running at a loss for a certain period of time, because you've got to put your resources into it. So, you know, trying to put that in a P&L, if you're going to try to sell super early, it's not something that's super sexy for a buyer. But I want to talk about the expenses as well. Content expenses. Did you have them as legitimate expenses, or did you have them as ad backs?
So the way that, when I sell my sites, you know, when it gets to the point to where I'm ready to sell, basically I haven't even produced content on them for 6 months. I mean, that's really usually. So I look at it as, hey, these were expenses in the past. And I know, you know, like that's a murky thing too. Some people say, well, it's not really an expense. It's an investment into the business, which it is. It's like inventory almost. So I know that there's, you know, 2 schools of thought there. For me, it was, you know, we used to produce content on the site. Here's how much it used to cost. I haven't done this for 6 months. And truthfully, I tell people, because I think this is the best, you know, opportunity, I say, hey, I don't think you need to produce a bunch of content. I think that you need to revise the current content. I think that would serve you better, which in most of my sites, one of the reasons I sell them is because I've exhausted the topics. I don't even know what to write about anymore. So it's like, hey, this is probably a good time now for you to revise it. If you want to do it yourself, great. If you want to hire someone for, you know, $1,000, $1,500 a month to do it, you can do that. It's kind of up to you. So, you know, the 2 buyers that I had this last year, they were fine with that answer. If I were investing, if I were creating new content and I was actively creating it and selling a site, I would list it on the P&L as a content investment, if you would. But I don't think I'd say it's an expense. I'd say, because it's completely, you know, something that is variable. You can make your content expense $5,000, or you can make it zero month to month. It's up to you as the buyer. So it's really hard to justify that as just an expense. So I would list it out so that they knew the way I was doing it, but I'd say, hey, this is the reality of the situation. You don't have to keep doing this. You can keep doing whatever you want to do, because it's going to be their business effectively anyway.
Yeah, it really is subject to what the previous owner has done, would do, and then what the new owner would do and spend and how they would spend it. It's just a very interesting topic to bring up, because when you don't neglect a site, like we said before, you don't do anything to it, it's going to die off, right? And that's where some brokers will be like, hey, you've got, you know, there's no content expenses, right? We don't need to publish content. But if you don't, not just publishing new content, but if you either A, don't publish new content, or B, don't update content, or even have some expenses or resources put towards changing things on the site SEO wise or updating and whatnot, if you don't have any expenses for that, then the site's going to die. So that side of the argument, it's fair for it to be like, okay, it's got to, you know, you've got to have some expenses there to make sure a site, you know, continues on the same path that it's at without it even growing. So we need to have some content, we need to have some sort of level of expenses in there. And then the other side is like, well, it's been pretty passive for a long time and it's sort of stayed stable, but it's only a matter of time. When does the environment cause it to change or either go up or go down? So it's a very tricky one. And there's no right or wrong answer. I'm heavily on the buyer's side, but now moving to the seller side, I understand. And we list actually sites for sale, and we add expenses in for either management, updating content, creating new content, or making some changes to the site in the P&Ls with our sellers, because we know that, and it doesn't need to be exhausted like a massive amount. And it shouldn't be like so little that it's like you're just taking the mickey. It's what we believe is fair on both sides, right? Because we've got the buyers, we've got mostly buyers, and that's why we decided, hey, let's just start finding some good off-market deals for people We only list good ones, and we do it at a 5% success fee. So if it sells, you don't have to pay 5% versus, you know, some other places. So we're just trying to make a really
that's a good success fee.
yeah. I don't know what Flippers is at the moment or when you sold, but yeah, I mean, they've got a lot of buyers.
I actually don't remember myself.
Yeah. I do know that we are lesser. And I can say that.
Yes, I assume that you are, yes. But I know it was less, or I know it was more than 5%, at least at the time. I don't know what it is now, but yeah, it definitely was. So, but yeah, I mean, everyone's doing the same amount of work. So, you know, it'd be nice to not have to pay a crazy amount. And I mean, 5% is definitely good. I can vouch for that. So,
yeah, thanks. We mainly started this not to we like money. Everybody likes making money. That's why we're here. It's great to do so. But we started this mostly because there was not that many good sites or off-market deals available for sale, and we wanted to provide them for our members. So this is why we started as a service, like to make our service even better. But aside from that, now we've started to, you know, list great sites that people, not just our members are buying, but our audience are buying, and it's a huge win. And I just like to have these discussions around, like, selling of the sites, because we're learning to be better, you know, listing agents, I guess. And you know, there's no perfect way to sell a business. Like, you know, sometimes you have your content expenses in there, sometimes you have maybe not, depending on where the business is at. What are the lessons that you learn, Ron, through the sale process for somebody else that's thinking about selling?
I think the biggest thing is, again, try to keep I don't want to say keep your books clean at all times, because I don't think it's worth keeping your books clean when you have no intent to sell. Like, it's just, why waste your energy there? But at least be able to say, okay, you know, as you're doing things, think about it and think, well, am I going to be able to kind of segment this out? You don't have to segment it out at the time, but at least know that that's a possibility. Again, I wouldn't sell on the downward trend, like when it's really, really going down. That doesn't work out well. I've had sites that have kind of been on that and I didn't really get much for them. Make sure that you're looking at all your expenses, and if it makes sense to trim anything down, do it, because you're going to get a big return on that. You know, just getting rid of certain expenses if they're there and saying, you know what, I could probably reduce this. Like even hosting, I mean, $100, you know, with a 30x valuation turns into $3,000 when you sell it, you know? So it's like, do I want to, you know, reduce the cost of $100 to make this $3,000? Like, yeah, that math makes sense. So really look at your books and make sure that that makes sense. And then, yeah, I mean, those would be, I think the biggest thing now is just looking at that and making sure that, you know, when you have I'll talk to content sites specifically because that's what I've done, but just make sure that you haven't done a bunch of shady stuff. You know, that's not ever a good thing. I've never been a proponent of that. I've always stayed mostly white hat. I've gotten a little bit more gray hat with time because Google's kind of irritating me. But I won't, you know, I've never gone like full black hat doing really dodgy stuff. I've never gone down that route. So just make sure, you know, it's a solid business, solid foundation. Having your team, having SOPs is a lifesaver, because it's really nice to say to someone, hey, with the sale of this comes this virtual assistant that I have who costs this amount of money, and they'll do this whole task for you. So you don't have, because, you know, a new buyer, I mean, it depends on the buyer, but a lot of times they don't want the headache of certain things. They want someone else to go with it. And, you know, I also always offer and I say, hey, you know, if you want to, when we sell this, if you want to get any consulting, we can work that into the price, or you can have the option to purchase more at this rate. I just make it as easy as I can for the buyers when I work with them. So
yeah, I love it. I love it. It's a really good way to think about it versus some people maybe thinking, I just need to sell this business to get as much money as I possibly can. You being a business owner and being an entrepreneur for a long time, you know, it's about the relationships of like, hey, let's just make it super easy and good for them, because you do that, they're going to win and you're going to win. So help each other win. And that brings me to my next question around with relationships. How did you identify who to spend more time with in terms of being the seller and, answering questions and providing details and information to, versus some people that you maybe just be tie kickers? Was there did you have a process where you're like, I'm going to have a call with this person? And, or did you, like, for me, I normally have like a vetting process with different things that I do in business and life. Is like, if they get a certain amount of information they need to call and it's worth it for me, I'll do it. If they don't, I'll do this first, and then we could have a call and answer a couple of questions first. But was there a bit of a, like, a vetting process for you on like who you would speak to and when you would speak to them?
Yeah, the two smaller sites, not a ton. I mean, you know, I use Flippa, so they have portfolios of people that have done stuff before, and looking for someone that's ever put a dollar in or out on that platform is a good thing, because you know that they're not just, you know, an account created last week. Usually what I'll do, to be honest, because when I sell a site, I have the mentality of this site's gone. Like, it's almost, I probably leave it in my head a little bit faster than I should, but I'm like, this is gone. It's not mine anymore. So if somebody asks for analytics access, I'll give them that. If they ask for Google Search Console access, I usually want to have a call first to make sure that they're really serious, because that's, you know, that's a deeper level of data. And I'm not all that comfortable with giving that to people. So I usually will have a call first. And that was the two smaller sites. With the bigger site, I required that they did an NDA prior to even looking at it. And then if they wanted to jump on a call, I unfortunately had a lot of tire kickers in the last one with this big site, which was very difficult to deal with. I wish that it was a little bit better, but I was dealing with people that had history on the site or had history on the platform. It just didn't work out, you know. So whether they're total tire kickers, I mean, I had a number of offers, but just it wasn't as high as what I was looking for. So I didn't have, you know, it's like no one ever offered anything. It was just, yeah, I think it's worth more. I think it will be worth more. So I had that. But yeah, aside from like letter of intent, and then, you know, when it got to the point to where people were looking for a call, I figure as an owner of a site, I mean, you know, if I were a buyer of a site, I would never put on a letter of intent before actually going on a call. So I have to attend that first call, right? Especially, you know, the site that I was selling was in like the mid six figures. So you're going to want to get on a call. And I understand that. Like, you have to understand, if you're a seller, the other side of the coin is, what would you buy a site if, you know, someone wouldn't want to jump on a call? So I just had to eat those hours and deal with it. But I don't think it's necessarily a terrible thing, because as I was jumping on these calls with these people, I was kind of honing my own answers. I'm sure that, you know, because a lot of the same recurring questions come. And, you know, the first few, you know, they kind of hit you with a surprise and you're like, oh, you know, I didn't think of that. And you don't have a great answer. And then once you get on more calls, it's like, oh yeah, someone's asked about that before, blah, 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 you know? So that, and then if they ever wanted a second call, I had a few people that wanted second calls. Then I was like, well, we're not going to do that unless there's a letter of intent, because you already know the site. Assuming that all the revenue and expenses are accurate, which they are, but, you know, I just want some type of letter of intent at that point. So I did get a couple letter of intent on this, but yeah, it never came through with this one. So the bigger one.
Wow, so much in there for people listening on selling a business. I love the shares, Ron. Before you go, I want to talk about money, mindset, and staying in business and the long game, and some things that have, like, what's worked for you. I know for myself personally, what's tripped me up is trying to rush things and trying to force things into existence and make money a lot faster and get out of my job a lot faster. And it caused me some damage, to be honest. I built out a portfolio that I'm glad I'd learned from it, but if I did it again, I wouldn't run towards that sort of goal of having a lot of sites and doing what I did. Yeah. So one thing for me was rushing, and then also focusing, like chopping and changing on different things, and staying the path for long distance. That's been the most helpful thing for me, like in terms of like getting out of my previous job and growing, even now with where my business is just staying focused and letting time do the work and the compounding of it. What are some of the things that you've learned along your way in terms of like good principles or philosophies that you stuck by that have helped you be successful in this space and, you know, just successful investor and successful business owner?
Yeah. So there's a lot to unpack with that. But I would say, you know, cause I've learned a lot, made a lot of mistakes, my God. But yeah, so I would say first off, one thing, that was always really important to me, and thank God I did it, was diversification, with content sites. I was always really big on diversification because, you know, you have one site that can get hit, but the other three go up from an algorithm, you know. So I was really, really big on that for a long time. And I think that that's good to a certain point. I think I might have diversified a little too much over time. I think that there is a sweet spot with the number of sites, maybe like for me personally, 5 or 6 at the most probably is where I should have stopped. You know, I went to like 11 or 12, I think, at one point. So, you know, 5 or 6, I think, is probably the absolute most. Now I'm down to 2. So that should tell you something. But, you know, I was really focused on diversification. I had one pretty good exit, but a lot of my sites weren't really big exits. It was, you know, like, well, I shouldn't say really big, but like just over 100,000 or under 100, like between 50 to 100,000, right? So I had a number of those exits. I didn't have the, you know, $1.4 million exit, right? Like I never had that. I had a lot of littler exits, but all those littler exits, you know, across a whole portfolio of sites obviously adds up to a bigger number. And then I had one pretty good size exit. So when you add those all up, it's actually quite a bit. So diversification was the key, I think, definitely in the past. I think now to talk to that, it's a little bit more difficult now because, you know, you have AI content here. You have Google having these algorithm changes all the time. You have Google AI becoming a thing. So I think actually honing in now is probably more important than it was in the past, at least with content sites. You know, e-com and all that, it's totally different beast, but I'm talking about e-com I'm talking about content sites here. So that's one thing. Second thing would be, I'm always really, really quick to hire and slow to fire people. So I'm quick to hire in that anytime I have a position, I hire 3 or maybe 4 people every single time as quick as possible, to do test tasks, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 different tasks. And I then compare them to each other to see who's the best one. I, out of those 3 to 4, maybe 5, I will, at that point, I guess that's quick to fire. At that point, I'll get rid of all but the one that I think is really good. And then if I have that one person that I've kind of entrusted over that little cohort, that little group, I'll go with them. And then if they make a mistake, you know, a month down the road, that's a pretty bad mistake, I'm not going to fire them because I'm going to say, instead of yelling at them or getting frustrated, my approach is, okay, I screwed up, because usually it is on me. I didn't tell them the right way to do this, or I didn't give them the right procedure. What did I do wrong here? So I go to them and I ask them, how did this happen? How can we prevent it to happen again in the future? How can I assist you? What was it that went wrong? So I have them, I don't yell at them. I have them explain what the thought process was and why they did what they did. And most of the time, you know, it's a misunderstanding. Some of the times it's just, I straight up screwed up. But yeah, so that's one of the biggest things too, is that, because I mean, if you can have someone on your team for 2, 3, 4 years, it's way better than having to just go through all these different people. And especially when you do a portfolio of sites, that one person can go from one site and do these tasks. And then you say, hey, you know what? I actually need that same help over here. Can you help? And then they're able to kind of, because of the same transferable, you know, skills, if you will. So that's actually been really, really big. And just know that if someone on your team fails, unless they're brand new and making a ton of mistakes, if someone on your team fails, it's your fault. It's not their fault. Something went wrong. And if it does end up being their fault once or twice, that's reasonable. If it, you know, if it continues, you got to find a new person. So yeah, so that's been a big thing. And then, yeah, like I said, the procedure thing, my business has so many procedures, just SOPs, that we do. You know, I use Trello. I was at one point working on a Google folders, Google Docs for a very long time. And I like refused to change my ways. And then I changed to Trello, which is free. And I was like, I'm never looking back. I can't believe I didn't do this before. So yeah, just building that out so there's dependencies so that the team can communicate with each other, things like that, is definitely, you know, shouldn't be understated. I mean, the people, it's the people that you have and treating them right and not treating them like garbage. I mean, they are people on the other end and they are the lifeline of my business. I can't tell you how many thousands of hours I've saved because of the people that I've hired. So
Yeah, it is a people game. It really is, and building the right relationships with the right people and harnessing the right relationships with the right people is so important. And I just like, I agree with you, is supporting them, you know, setting them up for success. Typically, you know, we, at the end of the day, if there's some major stuff up in the business, typically it's going to be the person who set the task fault, because there's, you know, there's chinks in the armor, or there's like little gaps that could be worked through that they have may have missed, and it's my fault for not having the SOP like very structured and good. So I love that.
And I would also say, make sure, on that same vein of thought, make sure you make it really clear to them. I think I've told all my workers I've worked with is, you know, I'm leading the ship, but I'm also your colleague. I'm not like this very scary boss that you can't ask questions to. So I'm very much about like, make sure that you ask questions if there is a doubt. Like, I will get frustrated and yell at you if you don't ask questions because you had it, you know, like that I won't accept. You need to ask questions if you have them, and I will happily answer those as long as I'm not always repeating my answers to the same questions, which you don't. So I would just say, open up that line of communication, make it really clear. You're not going to get in trouble for asking questions here. I need you to ask questions, because if you have a question, I didn't do something right. So I need you to ask that. And now I've been with a team. I mean, there's people that I've been with for 5-6 years at this point, pretty much almost since I started my business. So I've managed that way, and it's worked out pretty well over time. And then even when I've lost people that I liked, I have tried to get them with someone else, because I'm like, this is a good person. They know what they're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I love that philosophy there. So what's next for you, Ron, in terms of online businesses? What do you want to do with your portfolio? What's the, do you have goals, or are you just pretty happy with where you're at and focusing on something else? I don't know.
Yeah, it's been interesting. Like I said, I'm very nervous about the AI revolution coming. You know, I just, this stuff is exponential. It's going to learn quick. I don't think sites are dead, to be clear. I think that sites now, you know, if you're just creating a content site relying on Google for traffic, that model is going to suffer big time, I think. And it, specifically not paid traffic, but just organic traffic, which is how I've made a lot of my money and the businesses that I've run for a long time. So I'm seeing, in my opinion, that is going to get hit hard. And there's two ways that you can do it. You can, you know, say, okay, well, let's create a true brand, dive really deep, you know, diversify your traffic sources, et cetera. Honestly, at this point, I've been doing sites for such a long time, I'm tired of always trying to play catch up with Google and, you know, trying to just avoid this thing to go to this other thing. So we're still creating content on two sites. I still have them going because I have a lot of skills and everything in my head. So I am building those out. I'm excited about them. I may be diversifying those into YouTube. That's probably about, unfortunately, it's all under the Google umbrella. What are you going to do? So I'm doing that. I'm doing offline, completely offline business now, mostly focused on real estate stuff, some flipping, et cetera. One of my neighbors is a general contractor, which works really well for me. So I'm doing a lot of that. That's actually going really well. And we've been trying, I mean, we tried, I don't know if you heard about the Amazon Influencer Program. We tried that. It's done okay. A few little things here. We're thinking about like a YouTube channel. We got a lot of things that we're, again, diversifying. But I'm trying to get away from my business model of completely relying on Google organic and trying to get into other things. Because, I mean, the nice thing about me, like I said, is I've sold a lot of sites and I've got a comfortable nest egg now to where I can, you know, afford to say, hey, well, let's try these other things. Let me try these other interests now. So I'm doing a lot of that. I don't know where I'll end up, you know, in a year, year and a half, 2 years. We'll see what happens. You know, the sites are still doing okay. The real estate stuff is doing really well. You know, all these other things are doing okay. So we'll see where I go. I don't 100% know, but that's part of the journey, I guess, right? It's just, you know, keep going forward and see what where the cream rises to the top, and then I'll go that way. So
yeah, awesome. Well, Ron, thanks so much for coming on and sharing like so much of what you've done up until now. I'm sure you're going to be hanging around and doing some good stuff. You're too knowledgeable in the space to not stick with it for sure, I reckon. And I'm have no doubt that we'll be speaking in a year or two again and hearing some really good stuff from you. So thanks for coming on.
Yeah, looking forward to it. No problem.
Yeah. Where can we send people to, you know, hit you up?
Oh, gosh. I've been on this social media detox thing. I mean, my main... Yeah, well, you could still. So my main site is still 1hourprofessor.com. I'm not actively doing a ton there, but I'm still around there. And then also, I would say Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it. If you look up 1hourprofessor.com there, I am there, and I still log in daily, but I'm not posting as much. But I'm always there lurking. So
love it. Love it. Thanks so much for coming on, Ron. Appreciate your time.
No problem, Jerry. See you later.
Hey, YouTube watcher. If you thought that video was good, you should check out this video here on the two best types of websites beginners should buy. Or check out my playlist on how I made my first 100K from buying websites and how to do due diligence. Check it out. It's an awesome playlist. You'll enjoy it.